You're tuned to Perspectives, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. And joining us on Perspectives today is Barbara Leeming. Barbara is the author of the book Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy Onassis, The Untold Story. Barbara is a New York Times bestselling author. Three of her biographies have been New York Times Notable Books of the Year. Her most recent book, Churchill Defiant, received the Emery Rives Award from the International Churchill Center. Leeming's articles have appeared in the New York Times Magazine, Vanity Fair, The Times of London, and other publications. She lives in Connecticut. Thank you very much for being with us here, Barbara.
Thank you so much for asking me.
Now, as I mentioned, the book that just came out is Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy Onassis, The Untold Story, and there have been constant stories, books, specials about Jackie Kennedy, Jackie O, Jacqueline the Queen, as some people referred to her, because as you well aware, they saw the president and the first lady almost as royalty. But it's been 51 years now since the president was tragically gunned down in Dallas, Texas, and a lot of us don't know much about what was going on through this woman's mind, how she raised these children and kept them out of the limelight. But you have penned this book that just takes us into this world, and it's incredible what you tell us, because I guess people were not aware of all this.
I think the first question that everybody asks me is basically you're referring to, why possibly write another book about Jackie Kennedy? I mean, there have been dozens and dozens, and I had a very, very specific and really serious reason for writing it, particularly coming right after Churchill. I mean, I had to have a big reason. It's a hard act to follow. The reason I wrote it was because for 31 years, Jackie Kennedy suffered from PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and no one had ever written that story. And at a time when hundreds of thousands of our veterans are returning from Iraq and Afghanistan with PTSD, it's terribly, terribly important for us to really understand what it is to suffer from PTSD. And what I found out as I was able to put together Jackie's story of this 31-year struggle is that the story of her suffering and her survival can help us to understand what PTSD is in a different way, I think, because despite the fact that PTSD is in the news every day, most people still have no real understanding of what it means. For most people, PTSD is just something, is an abstraction. It's at best, it's a kind of list of symptoms. But a list of symptoms isn't enough. And Jackie's life story can show us, after the assassination, what PTSD actually feels like. I mean, remember, this is a woman whose husband's head was blown apart inches away from her face, and she was left bathed in his blood and his brains. And she, in the letters and the statements that she made and the friends that she was talking to after the assassination, she had the capacity to make us, to leave words behind that can actually make us feel what PTSD is like for someone who is suffering. Her story can make it visceral. And it's also, I think, very important because it's the story of somebody suffering from PTSD over a very long period of time, and you can see it up close and in detail over three decades. And it also, I think, is a very, very important story in this regard because it puts a name and a face that everybody knows to the disorder. It's always very easy for us to look away from a problem that, well, I don't know anybody who's suffering from PTSD. Well, this is somebody that everybody knows. Everybody knows it. And I think also of tremendous importance is the fact that the trauma that she experienced is something that we all saw. I mean, the assassination of President Kennedy was on television. It's been shown again and again and again, so that if you didn't see it at the time, you've seen it afterwards. And so the idea of the traumatic event itself is something that becomes very real to us. And that's the reason why I wrote it. I mean, it's a story that's important for history, but it's also crucially important for us in the United States right now to understand what PTSD is.
But it's a story that has not been told from that perspective, as you mentioned. We're visiting with Barbara Leeming. Her latest book is Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy Onassis, The Untold Story. Barbara Leeming, New York Times bestselling author. As you mentioned, it's a different perspective. Now, Barbara, some critics might say, well, they haven't discovered PTSD until recently with Gulf War veterans and also with Afghanistan and Iraq. However, documentaries have shown that soldiers from World War I and World War II suffered from PTSD.
Yes, one of the reasons it obviously was not written about before, because until 1980, there was no diagnosis of PTSD. But what was fascinating to me, and I'll tell you exactly how I came up with this whole thing. 15 years ago, I was in England doing research for a Kennedy book. I wrote a biography of President Kennedy. And I read a letter written by Harold Macmillan, who was the Prime Minister in England during the Kennedy administration. And it was a letter that he wrote to Jackie just after Jack was killed. And Macmillan had been a soldier in the First World War, and he'd been horribly wounded at the Battle of the Somme. And he wrote her a letter which, at the time, I couldn't make any sense of. Instead of writing as if she was a grieving widow, he immediately compared the experience of what had happened to her in Dallas to the experience of a soldier in war. He compared it to his own experience. And what was extraordinary to me was that in this batch of letters, there were all letters from Jackie responding to him. And Jackie's response to this letter, comparing it to the soldier's experience, was overwhelming. She said it was the most important letter of her life. And it was a letter that you could see her going back to over and over and over again for years. She'd quote exactly the words he'd used. She'd talk to him about the color of the ink on the page. I mean, it was something that meant more to her because this was somebody who was grasping something in a way that nobody else was. But 15 years ago, I didn't understand it. And while I was doing the President Kennedy biography, people were talking to me in much more detail than they had to other people about what Jackie was like, what was happening to her after the assassination. And I was starting to see letters that people hadn't seen before about her after the assassination. And I began at the same time to start hearing a lot about PTSD, and I became very interested in it, and I started reading the scientific literature of PTSD. And then I began to talk to people, soldiers who had experienced PTSD and were living with PTSD, and gradually I realized what the soldiers are experiencing is exactly what Jackie was experiencing after the assassination. And suddenly, Macmillan's letter began to make sense to me. And I think that what was so extraordinary was that I realized suddenly Jackie Kennedy had all the symptoms of what we now call PTSD. Of course, her situation was in many ways worse because no one knew what it was. She was told that she was crazy. She was told to get over it. And yet, in fact, this woman was suffering all of the things that we now know are symptoms of PTSD. I mean, for example, the kind of flashbacks that she had, and this goes on for 3 decades. I didn't understand until I read her letters, and I've actually seen people having a flashback. What's very important for us to understand is that if somebody who's having a PTSD flashback is not remembering something. I mean, for Jackie, when this kind of thing would happen to her, she was in the car in Dallas. She was reliving. It was happening all over again. Those gunshots were coming. The brains and the blood were all over her. And there was a very strange series of notes that Teddy White, who is a reporter for Life magazine and who actually wrote the very famous interview, the Camelot interview that Jackie gave days after the assassination, in which she put forth the myth of Camelot. But what's interesting about the interviewer note are not the Camelot stuff, but what Teddy White says when the blood scene, as he calls it, takes over, that there were moments when Jackie would be sitting there with him, this is a couple of days after the assassination, and suddenly she would start to talk about the ridges in Jack's brain, the sound of the gunshots, the heat, the feel of, and he said what was so disconcerting for him, and he didn't understand it, was he said, this woman isn't talking to me. She's not here in this room with me. She is in that car in Dallas. And that was something that I started hearing again and again from Jackie's friends, that when she would have these flashbacks, she was in that car. And I think the other thing that was very important for me when I was hearing this was that I also realized, and I think you can see it with Jackie, you know, when somebody's suffering from PTSD, their loved ones are also suffering from it, their families, their wives, their husbands, their children. And one of the things that's so horrible about watching somebody having one of these flashbacks is that you know they're not there. You can't reach them. And it's a horrendous thing. I mean, it's something I could never possibly have understood if I hadn't seen it for myself and if I hadn't read Jackie's words. And I think that's really, really important. I mean, in addition to the flashbacks, I mean, she had terrible survivor's guilt. She went over and over endlessly. What if I had heard, if I had realized that the backfire was not a backfire, that it was the first gunshot? What if I had pulled him then? What if I had done this? She couldn't have done anything. I mean, it was certainly not her fault, but she suffered from the kind of survivor's guilt that a soldier very often suffers from. After a while, she began to organize her entire life around trying to avoid any kind of trigger, anything that would throw her back into that car in Dallas again. She left Washington thinking, oh, if I move to New York, then it'll be over. And instead, what she did was she found herself in a city where everything was filled with triggers. And because over time, if you have PTSD, this happens. It's not just somebody saying to you, oh, this is November 22nd, this is the day. No, that would be a trigger. But for Jackie, it was all sorts of things. I mean, things that you can't possibly predict, certain colors of red, certain kinds of heat, just the way someone would move, anything. And so she was trying to organize her life around avoiding a trigger, and she couldn't because the triggers, it's all in her head. And so from there, she goes into what you very often see, which is what you call numbing. And there are letters. I can remember sitting in my office reading some of the letters from her where she's talking about not feeling anything, and she's just desperate to have any kind of pleasure again. She'd say just even the simplest thing, feeling becomes so dangerous that you deaden it all. The only thing she could feel was rage. And the reason she could feel rage is because she's preparing for the next attack. I mean, she is constantly on the alert for the next gunshot because she's expecting that. She's in a constant state of waiting for that. And yet, while all of this is going on, even somebody, you know, like Bobby Kennedy, who loved her and was trying to take care of her, I mean, he simply had no comprehension of what was happening to her. And he thought she was, after a while, being self-indulgent. And he would say, my crazy sister-in-law, I mean, why doesn't she get over it? Come on, Jackie, you have to get over this. And she couldn't. It's one of the most heartbreaking things to realize. And it's something that tragically, I mean, we repeat now, if we don't understand what is happening to somebody who is suffering from this.
We're visiting with award-winning and New York Times bestselling author Barbara Leeming. The recent book is Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy Onassis, The Untold Story. Now, you mentioned family, of course, comes in, and we don't understand what goes on. And this is nowhere near that, but a dear friend of mine who was in a head-on collision last summer, and thank God he made it, but he's supposed to have surgery today, and he said that he was feeling very anxious because after having nightmares of being trapped in that car, he's going to be strapped into a gurney again, and so all of that comes back. What about Jackie? Because she's trying to fight this, she's trying to, you know, she's in a fishbowl, she's under the microscope, and Bobby is trying to take care of her, but yet 5 years later, the same thing happens to Bobby.
Yes, that's the worst thing, of course, that can happen, because one of the things that you want to do if you've suffered a traumatic experience is to reestablish some sort of feeling of safety. And in Jackie's case, the ultimate horror occurs. The assassination is repeated when Bobby is killed in 1968. But even before that, I mean, there's something that we've collectively forgotten, I think, as Americans now. I mean, we just remember that we always loved Jackie and we always admired her. Well, we didn't, because in 1966, Jackie did something. This is, you know, 3 years after the assassination. There was a book about to be published, which she had commissioned, called The Death of a President by William Manchester, who himself suffered from PTSD. And the story of her collision with Manchester is one of the most extraordinary and frightening parts of the book, because Manchester was the only person that she talked to, except for the Warren Commission, officially about her account of the assassination. She did not know that he had PTSD at that point. He didn't know it. And the two of them in a room together were toxic with each other. And by the time that the interviews with Manchester were over, because Jackie was desperately trying to forget what had happened, and Manchester wanted to know every detail of what happened, and it was absolutely the worst thing that could have possibly happened to her at that moment. He was fueling her with daiquiris to make sure she kept talking. By the end of those interviews, I mean, she was literally suicidal. And when you read the accounts of what she was saying in her letters, when talking to her friends and so forth about what she was saying after those interviews, I mean, she just was in horrendous, horrendous condition. And that's when basically she fled from Washington. But when Manchester finished his book and was ready to publish, Jackie tried to stop the book because she realized 3 years later, I mean, she was still in full PTSD, and she could not face the thought, as she put it, of walking down the streets in New York and seeing excerpts on the newsstand, the idea that there would be that book in the windows of bookstores. She just couldn't possibly happen, and she had to stop it. And that, in fact, was a big break with Bobby Kennedy, because he was unable to stop it for her, and she just felt completely betrayed by him at that point. And she finally went to court to try and stop it. And what we've all forgotten is what the reaction of the American public at that moment was, and what the reaction of a lot of the press was. First of all, they treated it as if this was a self-indulgent woman. There were articles in the press at that point calling her a professional martyr. They said she was acting. They said she was selfish. They said that she wanted to prolong the memory of the assassination. Nobody understood. Nobody seemed to step back and think, she just can't face this. But there's a reason for that, I think, because in 1966, when we attacked her, and then in 1968, when she married Onassis and we attacked her again, it has a great deal to do with the way a society reacts to traumatic events. We don't like to be reminded, as any trauma reminds us, that we're not really in control of our lives, that terrible things happen and we can't prevent them, and that they're random things. And Jack Kennedy's assassination was a nationally traumatic event. It frightened us all. If gunmen can shoot the President of the United States with all the protection that he has, and this man who seemed to have everything, it can happen to anyone. And so by 1966, Jackie had become a kind of reminder of that tragedy. And then when it happened again with Bobby Kennedy in 1968, and Jackie married Aristotle Onassis, the reaction was just horrendous. She sold herself to the highest bidder. Jack Kennedy dies again. But when I saw Jackie's letters that she wrote just before the marriage to Onassis, I can't believe I blame myself. I mean, I remember thinking, oh, this is an awful woman. What is she doing? When you read her letters then, I mean, especially her letters to Robert McNamara, with whom she was tremendously involved and who very much complicated her situation because of the Vietnam War, because the violence of Vietnam became very connected in Jackie's mind, clearly, to the violence of Dallas. The whole 60s is a very, very violent period. And McNamara, even as he was trying to help her, was also beleaguered himself, and he was making her life much more complicated at that point. But she wrote him one letter in particular that, I mean, I can never forget. She speaks to him just before she's going to marry Onassis, and she's reacting to the Bobby assassination. And she said, "We're comrades in love and blood." And she said, "I'm going to be annihilated, and I know it. And I know there's no hope. It's just going to happen. I have to accept that this is going to happen." And she's talking about Teddy Kennedy's lips being stained with red wine like blood. And it's just a letter that's permeated with the expectation of death. And saw another letter that she wrote to Joe Alsop, who was a close friend at the time, and she said, "I'm never going to love anyone again. I'm never going to care about anyone again, because obviously this is going to happen again." And that's the state of mind that sent her to Onassis, because she was looking for protection that she didn't believe she could get anywhere, but at least this man had his own airline, his own island, his own security guards. He had as much protection as she could get from anyone. She's a woman seeking safety. The fact that he was one of the richest men in the world, well, that mattered because maybe that money could protect her. And yet, I mean, none of us seem to think about that. It seems so logical now, but at the time it didn't, because we wanted her gone. I mean, we wanted the 60s over. You have to remember, this is just when we elected Richard Nixon. I mean, we wanted the violence of the 60s with Martin Luther King being killed, with the Vietnam War on television every night. We wanted this over, and Jackie Kennedy had become a kind of living reminder of all of that violence. And so we attacked her, and that is usually what happens with victims of trauma. all too often, society turns on them because they remind us of something we don't want to know about, we don't want to think about. It's a terrible, terrible thing. And for her, I mean, you call that the second injury, and that was just devastating to her. I mean, I remember reading one letter about her reaction, saying, you know, this woman is just crushed by this. It was like another attack, and that was all she expected, was to constantly be attacked. It's a really, really horrendous commentary on what society does, but you have to understand why we react the way we do, and I think that's another thing that her story can tell us and warn us about. I think it's very important in that regard.
We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author Barbara Leeming. The book is Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy Onassis, The Untold Story. Barbara, what about her children?
I think the reason that she ultimately said she did not kill herself was because of the children. But there was a letter I remember reading when she took the children to England with her for the first memorial to President Kennedy that she was able to go to after the assassination at Runnymede, when the English people gave a memorial to Jack Kennedy of land where the Magna Carta was signed. And Jackie wrote in this letter about the terrible burden that those two little ones have on their shoulders, not just representing their father, but I think what she was trying to say, and she did say it in other letters, was the burden of having a mother who was suffering like this, and they couldn't understand it. They didn't. They were obviously, John Jr., certainly was very sensitive to it. And she knew it, and she kept writing in letters saying, you know, I'm afraid of the damage I'm going to do to them. I mean, she was very frightened of that, and because part of her did think she was crazy, and she knew how hard it was for them. But I think the children ultimately were what kept her alive. I mean, she said that. That's the only reason that she didn't kill herself at certain points. And I think that was, you know, enormously important. And again, it's the thing of understanding that when someone is suffering from PTSD, it takes an enormous toll on the family and on their friends. One of the things I think, though, that we have to remember with this story, another reason I think is important, because I'm talking about all of the horrible parts, there is something that's really kind of wonderful about this, because it's also a story of survival. I mean, Jackie did stay alive. She didn't kill herself. And not only that, but she improvised at a time with no help, when no one understood what was going on with her. Over time, certain things lessened, but over time, she improvised solutions that allowed her to have a remarkable degree of control over the worst of her symptoms, and so that she was able to make a meaningful life for herself and for her children. By the time that Onassis died in 1975, I mean, she knew that she had to do something. And what she did was really to make herself a life in which she had some measure of control. I mean, that feeling of helplessness, which, I mean, we can all see that. I mean, the moment of absolute helplessness is that moment when we've all seen it from the Zapruder film, when she's on the back of the car and she's crawling out. And that was a moment she did not remember. She remembered everything else from the assassination, but that's the, and very often at the worst moment of utter helplessness, you do dissociate or forget. And she had no memory of that. But this woman who had been that helpless made herself a life in which she was aware that there were certain things she could control and that she could do. She went to work. She actually, in her editing job, it turned out to be something that was enormously helpful for her, because she could reorganize stories to come out the way she wanted them to come out. I mean, simple things like that. She became an exercise fanatic. She had a very predictable routine that she did. They're small things, but they eventually worked for her. And she found a man who was a very different kind of man from Jack Kennedy or from Onassis, a very predictable and very loyal human being who was very important to her in her life. And so in the end, it's a story of survival. And she said something lovely. I mean, it's my favorite thing that she ever said. In 1980, coincidentally, the year that there was a diagnosis of PTSD for the first time, somebody asked her at a dinner party, what's your proudest achievement? What's the greatest thing that you did? And they clearly expected her to say, oh, I redid the White House, or I conquered Paris, or something like that. And they said, without any hesitation, she looked at them and she said, I kept my sanity. And that's an incredible thing, that this woman, who not only was misunderstood, but who was attacked, who had trauma repeatedly in her life, was able to keep her sanity. That's a story that I thought deserve to be told. And I think also what I hope, anyway, is that by understanding her story and seeing it in a case of someone like that who we think we know, perhaps she will help others by letting society know just how deeply someone is suffering when they have PTSD and how important it is that we find ways to help them. It's a story for history that should be told correctly, but it's also a history for our time, I think.
Barbara, we have about a minute left in the program. However, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you, with her mother gone and her brother gone, what about Caroline?
I think that, you know, it's a remarkable tribute to her mother that their daughter has gone on. And I mean, of course, her mother was dead by the time John died. And it's, you know, it's a child who suffered extraordinary things. There's a quite remarkable story in the book about Caroline almost being killed by a bomb and what that did to Jackie at the moment when she was trying to first rebuild her life. I mean, it's a very tangled and very complicated story. And what's so strange about it is that we've seen so many pictures of Jackie and of the children, and we think that somehow we know what was going on, and it turns out we knew virtually nothing. And it's important that we know and that we understand.
Well, thank you very much for sharing that. And again, the book is Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy Onassis, The Untold Story. Barbara Leeming, a New York Times bestselling author. Barbara, thank you very much for being with us here today.
Thank you so much, Louis. I really enjoyed talking to you. Thank you.
We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author Barbara Leeming. The book is Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy Onassis, The Untold Story. Thank you.
George Lopez and the Power of a Good Mentor. I'm Bill Newcott, and from AARP Studios, this is Movies for Grownups.
Ready for the engineering club?
I'd like to enter this.
The 5th annual underwater robotics competition.
So you want to go up against the best tech schools in the country.
Actor-comedian George Lopez stars in the true story of an Arizona high school teacher who advises a team of underprivileged students as they try to design and build an underwater robot in the inspiring and often funny new film, Spare Parts. The star dropped by our studios with his young co-star, Carlos Penavega, and told me that playing a dedicated teacher reminded him of his own school experiences.
Yeah, you know, we were talking about that. I fortunately had, you know, when I look back because of this movie, several teachers that took an interest in me beyond the classroom. You know, one was a civics teacher in high school that kind of knew that I was introverted and a little bit shy and had me just do things around the classroom to get me kind of out of my seat.
You were introverted and very shy.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, that's not unusual. A lot of comedians.
And this was before medication. You know, I did it the old way, man. He tried to beat it out of me by just getting me to hand out papers and talk to other students. Now you can take a pill and like, hey, I'm better now. Sorry, did I yell at you this morning? I'm so sorry.
Carlos, this is obviously a good job for you, this film.
Yes, I'm very thankful for it.
But I have a feeling you're walking away from it with something of a relationship with George.
Yes, he's my Sandra Bullock.
It is a very good relationship.
I grew up watching his show. Being Latin and seeing this Latin family having their own TV show, to me that was like huge. I was like, wow, I can do this. In 20 years, I mean, if I can have a career half as awesome as this guy, he's the man.
You know, I was inspired by Freddie Prinze Sr. and Chico and the Man. That's when you kind of realized that stand-up comedian could be a job. Mm. And then, you know, I became friends with his son.
Yeah, it's funny to think of Freddie Prinze as Sr. because he'll always be young.
I know, I got to say Sr., man. I know he's 22.
Spare Parts, starring George Lopez, Carlos Penavega, Jamie Lee Curtis, and Marissa Tomei, is in theaters. I'm Bill Newcott.
Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineers, Roman Martinez and Katie McCormick. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Luis Sainz.